Well, good morning. If we can get started, we can finish on time, I guess, right? I always thought it was good to get bonus points for finishing on time or early. I'm Greg Dolby, and thanks for coming. This would have been nowhere near as much fun without you. I'm one of the principals in our organization called Ellison Surface Technologies. We are a Cincinnati-based aerospace company. So our business really is a business that's thriving today. I almost feel guilty when I say that sometimes because a lot of people I talk to seem to have a business that's struggling, and aerospace is a growing industry. It's a remarkably growing industry, and we are in actually what's called a super cycle. I won't bore you with the details of that, but there's incredible pressure in our industry in the years ahead to keep up with the pace of growth from our customers. So we focus primarily on processes that are related to commercial military aircraft engines. And we are an engineering-based organization, a lot of metallurgical terms. I try not to use them in meetings like this because they won't make any sense to you. But at the end of the day, I want to talk about, I think what's an important strategy for any Christian company. And I know when I say that, some of us cringe and say, well, there's no such thing as a Christian company, only Christian people who run companies. I agree, that's true. But one of the challenges I think many of us face in our organization is we have a set of faith-based values, mission statements, core values. They go by different terms, right? Is it frustrating at times when employees don't line up with that? You ever had a situation where maybe the pushback, the response, the lack of support for that, or you just found yourself struggling with how to effectively convey and align your engagement strategies around those important principles? So now, what I'd like you to take away from our session, and I'd like this to be somewhat interactive because I'd like to hear and learn from you as well, is that, first of all, the takeaways are that there are cultural barriers today in any market to really getting people to fully engage in our practices when they're rooted in biblical principles. Some of that's because of the language we use. But I think the alignment of those frameworks with strategies that employees will embrace is really the goal we have in mind in our organization. Not just to use the words and make the statements and put them on pieces of paper or on posters, but get our employees to embrace that. And then what are some of the leadership behaviors that really shape that? And I don't mean the things we do always. Sometimes the things we don't do are some of those behaviors that we really need to focus on. So about our company, Ellison Group, just to give you a sense of our diversity and part of the challenge we have in taking biblical principles and making them work in our business context is we're really all over. And I've got a mix of cultures here. If you look at this, we're in Kentucky. We're in Vermont. I call that the stubborn Northeast mentality up there. We're in Bromont, Quebec. Yes, we're not just in Canada. We're in French-Canadian Canada, different culture. We're in Wartburg, Tennessee, where frankly our employees expect you to tell them what to do. That's their culture. And we are also in Sonora, Mexico, on the Sea of Cortez, kind of a resort area, but we're in an aerospace business in there. Now you can picture, if you can picture your mind for a minute, the challenge of taking any one set of values and getting those different constituencies to embrace them, because we're really in a lot of different places. Our core business is really surface treatments and special processes, and we serve those markets, and I mentioned that already, so I won't belabor that. Here's some of our core values. I just extracted, next slide please, I just extracted from a larger body of things these statements. Our core values, to be a world-class treatment solution provider in the markets we serve. That doesn't sound like a problem, right? People can embrace that. That leads into Christ-like servant leadership at all levels. So we actually make that statement publicly, internally, and with our customers and our vendors and employees. Uncompromising integrity in all we do, constant improvement and learning, passionate commitment to quality, honoring the priority of the family, investing in our communities and leaving a lasting legacy. Now, let me ask you, is there any one word on there or phrase that you might think a secular employee might have a problem with? Pick one out. Christ-like. Christ-like servant leadership. Okay. Anything else on there? It might be confusing. Maybe not controversial, but might be confusing.
Priority of the family.
Yeah, sure. Even legacy to some people is problematic, you know, leaving a lasting legacy. Go to the next slide. We go on to say that our mission is to serve our customers and employees in a manner reflecting exceptional stewardship of the resources entrusted to us And we make this bold statement that we are ultimately accountable to God and we aspire to impact eternity in all we do. Now, some of those phrases actually do invite an interesting response from some employees. Always interests me in when we're interviewing, especially leaders in our organization, the questions they'll ask about that. Here's my favorite question. Do I have to believe all that to work here? That's an interesting question. My answer usually is no, but it helps. And frankly, I love that question because at times it gives us the chance to say, can we talk about that? What is it about that statement as an applicant that concerns you? And I love the opportunity to get a person to come to a conclusion to say, you know what, now that I think about it, because of that statement, you're probably honest, you have a sense of integrity, you're probably not just there to line your pockets, and you have bigger goals in mind. I kind of like that. So that conversation actually can turn into a positive thing. Give me some examples. Do any of you here in the room in a similar way in your organization use that kind of language in a mission statement, a value statement, or in any sense of the word with your employees? Yes, yes, sir. Example.
Our statement, I'll read it to you. Our mission statement goes, to serve our customers and stakeholders with excellence, to achieve profitable growth, which enables us to care for employees and people in a way that honors God.
All right, so they use the word God in there. That's great, I love that. That's, well, how long did it take to come up with that? Was that to take some work? Did a committee do that?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Any others?
Ours does, and I can't repeat what it is. I
can you think of a word or a phrase in there?
We serve our customers. I didn't mention God. But in our little group, in our office, the staff were all believers, and our employees actually pushed us to include more of God. And we wanted to, but...
Wow.
Joyfully serve customers. So.
Any other examples?
In our purpose statement, we use the phrase God honoring.
God honoring, okay. Is this a for-profit company?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Was that a for-profit company, sir? Okay. Yes, sir.
Trusted stewards.
Trusted stewards. Stewardship's an interesting word, not always understood. There was one more over here.
Yeah, it's just as a business for the purpose of honoring God, creating wealth for its employees, and supporting Christian service.
That's great. Can I steal that one?
That tub of cash.
Sure. I didn't do it.
A good friend of mine, Steve Thorne, who's the president of Pacific Dental, I would encourage you to go online and look at their value statement as a good example. Every statement starts with a "we believe." For example, we believe that only God knows what tomorrow holds. Therefore, we strive each day to serve our customers well. And he's done a good job of connecting the "we believe" with the behavior that he expects from his employees. I like that. Pacific Dental, look at that. Next slide. Here are what I call the five most common questions we get in our organization around this idea of overtly biblical statements. The first one, could I see that in action, please, instead of just on a placard? You ever heard that question? Why are things like legacy and stewardship so important to management? I actually had a guy walk into my office one day and he goes, you got to help me understand this. Why do you talk about legacy and stewardship? Why is that so important to you guys? How about this one? My supervisor is a bad model, so why is nobody doing anything about that? Anyone ever heard that? You better do something about that. Why do you even need to mix religion and work as if you can't be a success without that? Isn't that an interesting question? And finally, I already mentioned this, do I really have to believe all that to be happy here? You know, that first question comes, I believe, because of our inconsistency in leadership. We beg that question because some of the things we do and say or don't do or don't say creates an inconsistency in the message. And so somebody wants to know, can I actually see that versus seeing it on a placard somewhere? Here's my favorite common question or statement on the next slide. Dieu n'est pas ce qui est important ici. Anybody speak French? That statement was made by a Canadian employee who said to me in reference to our goals and our mission, Greg, I just have to tell you, God is just not that important here. That, to me, was an incredible eye-opening statement because it wasn't protesting the words and language. It was sincerely trying to help me understand, you don't need to bother here because God's just not that important here. And it's taken time for me and our organization to kind of process that and think, what does that really mean? Now, I'm not saying no Canadians believe in God. I didn't say that. But in the context we were in, I was really challenged by an employee who said, look, I don't have a problem with your mission statement, but it's just not that important here. Next slide. But I have some favorite affirmations as well, and I've written down a few of them. An employee who said, it feels good to know that management has a sense of accountability to a higher calling. I feel safe around that. Isn't that a great statement by an employee who would say that? I feel like I can be more trusting here since there are timeless principles guiding the business decisions. There is a freedom of Christian expression here that I really missed anywhere else I worked. We're a secular company. Keep that in mind. Number four, the non-believer made this statement. I am very surprised that a company can say and do these things in such a politically correct culture, and I like it. I appreciated that. And finally, I see God's blessing in response to your faithfulness. I would really encourage you, Brian and I had a conversation up here this morning about, I believe, how God blesses our transparency and the way we share a biblical-based worldview in our organization. And you might lose a customer over that, but God will bring you a blessing. I really believe that. Next slide. So the purpose of our session here really is to, if you go to the next slide, please, is to really look at what are some of the common barriers. I'm going to let you read those for a second. Somebody on there, pick one out of there that you would tell me, yep, I've experienced that. I've seen that in our organization. A barrier to transparency in core values. Anybody see one up there that you can relate to?
A failure to clarify the meaning of our words. That's the religious ease.
Okay, good example. A time when the barrier relates to our lack of clarity. What it is we're saying and what it is we believe.
The third one is really big with managers and executives.
Okay, where'd that come from? Okay, the fear of legal repercussions.
Not knowing how much freedom we do have.
Exactly.
That one, suspicion of motives. I think you get that, but it also goes back to your earlier slide that said your manager is not acting in a way that is consistent with your values, get that thrown at you yourself one day and you have to defend that.
Yeah.
That's a no.
It is. Yeah, actually, I was having dinner last night talking to Steve Green about Hobby Lobby, and he thought maybe 60% of their middle managers were believers. They don't have an inventory of that, so they don't know for sure. But we're talking about the reality that in our organizations, we often have non-believers in leadership roles who are asked the questions they can't answer because they're not a believer themselves. It's our responsibility, we believe, to help them do that. Not to do it with the spiritual energy that we would as believers, but to really understand that, to appreciate that difficulty. I think the last one's important, relevance. It's a barrier to aligning your faith-based perspective with employee engagement because they don't understand the relevance of that. What difference does that make? To them, at least in their job, it doesn't make sense. I've been using this term employee engagement. Turn this to the next slide there, and let me just define it from that renowned resource called Wikipedia. One who is fully involved in and enthusiastic about their work in a manner that furthers the organization's interests. That's actually a pretty good definition. Chris Patton, by the way, he's got a great blog called Christian Faith at Work. He's an automobile dealer in Atlanta, Georgia. Sign up for that. You'll be really encouraged by what Chris has to say. He puts it this way. The problem with disengaged employees is that they severely reduce the impact we strive for as a Christian business. It requires really then our attention. All right, so what I want to share with you in our remaining time here together really is what I consider six best practices. If you are an owner or a Christian in a business and you are a decision maker, an influencer, somebody who has to defend what your organization says it believes in, I think there are best practices. And by the way, if you like some or all of this, it's for free. I'll give it to you. Just see me. I'll send it to you. You have to write all this down. If you don't like it, don't call me. Okay? It's somebody else's idea. No, I'm just kidding. You don't need to write it down. I'd be happy to give it to you. I got nothing to sell. We just really are blessed by how well this has worked for us, and I'd like to see other companies do as well. Here's the number one, I think, best practice in aligning faith-based strategies with employee engagement. Number one, make explicit what is implicit. I have had so many conversations with people, and I was in the middle of a conversation, and it occurred to me they have no idea what I mean by that word. Like stewardship, like legacy, like eternal impact. They just don't know. We really need to make explicit what is implicit. You know, one of the practices that I have 6 people in the organization, and you might think this is kind of a strange way to approach this. 6 people who are not believers. They cover the genders, they cover the generations. I was intentional about it. These are not believers. And I meet with them individually, periodically, and I ask them questions about their understanding of our faith-based mission and vision. And I do that with respect, and I say, I want to understand your interpretation of the words we're using. And I know you don't have perfect alignment with this, and but I respect you, and I want to know what you think. And we have significantly crafted changes in our wording to respect that. Okay, now I'm not going to undermine the core message or change that, but it helps to do that. I would suggest you ask the people who are probably the least believing at the core how they view what you're saying, and use that feedback. Number two, guard the truth but flex the language. That's a little bit of what I said already. I mean, I've had to really do that in Tennessee, in Kentucky, in Vermont, in Quebec, in Mexico. Those are different contexts. Guard the truth, but flex the language. You know, sometimes the statements we make, the words we use, and the placards we hang on the wall just don't really make sense in some context. And I don't encourage you to step back away and look at those and say, in this context, does that make perfect sense, or could I shape that differently? Something we did early in our company, and I think we began to recognize it, we used to say things like, well, if we just walk the talk, and we just sort of act it out, people will get it by osmosis. They'll just sort of see what we mean. Now, it's very important that we become a gold role model. But in the context of making explicit what is implicit, osmosis is not that effective. You just can't expect people to embrace these values just by gradual unconscious assimilation of those ideas. It doesn't work that well.
And what has led you?
The constant feedback that we've had over time from people who it was clear they didn't know what the words meant we were using.
So people who had been around a long time didn't get it,
you know? And to bring that kind of clarity and to have someone go, oh, okay, I understand now. But the dependence on osmosis or just figuring out because you're around it, that's a dangerous thing. Promote values that intrinsically drive the organization, not aspirations that have unclear intentions. What I mean by that is, you know, when you can take that biblical principle and you can turn that to something that makes sense in the job, the light bulb goes on for people. It's a intrinsically driving factor in the organization. We speak about accountability to God in terms of quality in all that we do. If I say to an employee, accountability to God, it doesn't resonate the same as the importance of recognizing the quality in all that you do. That's accountability. So you can take the language and you make it relevant intrinsically to drive the organization or translate it. Stewardship in our organization is simply personal ownership. So we expect a person to personally own the resources around them that they are responsible for. That is how we look at stewardship in the organization. So make explicit what is implicit. Don't just assume that people know what you mean by that language. I've estimated in our organization that about 40%, 45%, this is a very informal survey, of our employees across those locations don't have what I'll call a fundamental Bible upbringing or background. But we got every religion in the world recognized somewhere in one of our sites. I am absolutely sure of that. And I tell you what, your effort to understand why they think what they think is very important. There's a lot of respect for that. Okay, so don't miss that. Number two, the second barrier, or best practice, I'm sorry, is to really model the way. I can remember in the early days back in the late 90s when we spent so much time on policy and process clarity versus behavioral incarnation. Behavioral incarnation, what does that mean? That means that we say it, but we live it, and we look for teaching moments, and we find every opportunity we can at every level in the organization to amplify every moment of truth, to really bring it to the surface, to really say, hey guys, here's an example of what stewardship looks like. Here's an example of, and to do that at all levels, from top to bottom, that's very important. Yes.
An example of that. We have the words honesty in our core values.
Okay.
And quality is one of the words too.
Yeah.
So what we did is when we came up with our core value statement, we asked every employee to sign the statement. And it's interesting, there were some people that refused to sign it. And one of the guys came to me and said, why are you not prepared to sign that thing? I asked him. He said, I tell you what, he says, I've really thought about this hard, that I can't produce a quality product with the tools that I have. So I can't be honest saying that I can produce this. So I refuse to sign it. So I said, what will it take for you to sign this thing? He says, you get me the right tools, I'll sign it.
Yeah. Everybody hear that? That's a great example. Yeah. Hey, that
it drilled it down. Yeah. At all our company functions, I actually used that as an example.
Yeah.
And people came out of the weeds telling us what they were challenging in our core value statement.
Yeah.
We had to start living it, not just talking about
it. What tools did he need specifically that you provided that allowed him to do the science?
We injection mold, okay? What? Injection mold. That's what we do.
Mold. Physical tools.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So he said to me, I can't produce a quality product because the knives I use to trim these panels, they suck.
Quality product was the thing. I'll produce a quality product.
So we said in our core value statement, honesty, integrity is something we're going to hold you by. We also are going to provide our customers with world-class quality. And he said, I can't put those two together. They just don't jive. And he said, I refuse to sign that statement because I can't do that.
Yeah.
That reverberated through the whole plant like you cannot believe. People came out of the woodwork with stuff that they started to challenge. And we as a company had to start living it. It wasn't just a document anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
And what precipitated that was the courage to say, sign the document.
Yeah.
That was scary because we've got a lot of words in our document and many faiths where we put God in our statement. They're like, how do you expect me to sign that thing?
Yeah.
And so it was round table discussions to actually force people, or not force them, but to clarify what you're saying.
Yeah. And really, that it fits with the point on being alert to compromise, because that scenario could have resulted in the opposite by saying, no, I'm not going to give you those tools, or no, you have to sign it anyway, and it reverberates in the negative sense, right?
Oh, big time.
I wanted to share a similar situation. We had a situation once where we don't actually manufacture anything. Everything we work on is a customer piece of property comes to us for what we do. Everything we do is additive. And we had an employee who actually destroyed a customer component. The cost was $40,000. It would have been very easy for us to put it back in the box, send it to the customer, and say, that's your problem, must have happened in shipping. No way you could have proven it otherwise. We could tell when that employee brought that to our attention. First of all, he feared for his own job because it was his fault, operator error. We used that as a teaching moment in a meeting, in a plant meeting, to talk about how precisely critical it is to recognize ownership. He stepped forward. We appreciated that. We applauded that. And we called the customer and we said, we messed up your part. We're sending you a check for $40,000. We're going to do that not because we want to impress our employees, per se, but because it's the right thing to do. And we explained to our employees, that is the right thing to do. And that's exactly what our values are meant to amplify. And that reverberated just in the same way you said, okay. And I'm not saying that because we're proud of that. I'm giving that an example of those moments come in your organization where you better be ready to put your money where your mouth is, right? Okay. Fourth, practice repentance. Boy, I tell you what, Every time a leader makes the mistake, there's the megaphone, right? My good friend John Townsend always talks about the leadership megaphone and how a mistake and a good thing is amplified by leaders. And when leaders make mistakes, repent. Stand in front of your people and say, you know what? What I said, what I did yesterday, it was an absolute compromise of our vision. And to say to your employees, that was my mistake, I should have known better, I'll do better next time, will you forgive me? Is incredibly transformational in employee engagement, okay? Incredibly. And strive, last on modeling the way, is to strive for what I call transcendent values versus threshold values. Let me give an example of a transcendent value. So a transcendent value, first of all, is an awareness that there are things at stake greater than me, greater than my business, some things at stake greater than that. It's an attitude of dying to what I want in the service of something greater. And a transcendent value, for example, we talk about, and we actually use this terminology in the organization, in the right context, we'll talk about our desire to have unconditional love for our employees. Well, that's a transcendent value versus a threshold value of saying, you get it if you earn it. Most of the time we speak to employees, most organizations, in terms of you earn respect, you earn achievement, you earn recognition. We flip that over in a more transcendent sense and say, we love every one of you, and we want everything we do and say to you to reflect our unconditional love of you. That brings about a whole different level of transparency, especially with employees who make mistakes, and we all do. I would encourage you to consider that. The next best practice is what I call invite participation. Now, what we're talking about, we're saying we have these a biblical worldview, biblical principles, sometimes what's called religious language, and it's out there. The question I have, or challenge I would have for you, is did you invite participation from people before you published all that? Because employees who weigh in are more likely to buy in. And you have to have, in my opinion, a very good cross-section of believers and non-believers in that process, and just be ready to take a gut punch once in a while from someone who wants to argue that doesn't make sense to them. At the end of the day, you'll be better off weighing in. We've learned in the last few years to give more voice to our reality. Our reality is it doesn't always work. Not everything we say works. Not every employee buys in. Not every attempt we make to live this out is successful. That's our reality. We have to give voice to that. We have to allow people to stand up, step forward, and say, that's not working. That's very important. Expect to be doubted or mistrusted. I've talked about that earlier, but just expect it, you know, and don't blow it off, don't slough it off. I've had to learn this one. This has been a hard lesson for me. Listen until others agree they've been hurt. You know, what's the key word in there, the key idea in that? Not listen until you think you're finished telling them what's on your mind, but listen until they have stated their agreement with that. Do you understand that? And then what I call the practice of yes, no, and maybe. I know, I think one of the lost skills we have in an organization, especially when it's growing and diverse, is ideas come from the employees and we don't really give them an answer. An answer would be yes, we'll do it, no, we won't, or maybe if, but there's always closure. So every discussion about biblical values and a faith-based worldview, we look at that and go, this question is valid, let's deal with it. Yes, no, or maybe, whatever behind that question. Inviting participation, that's really key.
Just to support what you're saying there, one of the things that we do is we have a survey once a year that we give all our employees. And those surveys ask questions of faith, how we handle our core values. We have a core value questionnaire. And then we take all those answers, and then we have roundtables afterwards to dissect some of the key issues that come out.
Exactly.
It's really interesting to see what happens.
We do that same thing. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Next best practice. You know, you might be thinking, okay, I've got these beliefs, this system, this framework of thinking about biblical things, and I'm worried about recruiting people who buy into that. And I think this best practice is to stop recruiting and start attracting. There's a difference. A few years ago, I got to know a guy by the name of Bruce Nordstrom from the Nordstrom All the women in the room know who I'm talking about, and all the men don't, right? Nordstrom, great. Now, Nordstrom has very little trouble hiring people. They have a great mission in their organization of service, incredible service. They empower their employees. They give them cash and say, if your customer needs something unusual, here's the money, spend it. And I said, Bruce, how do you find people who are lining up with that? He goes, I haven't recruited in 10 years. We simply tell our story. As it says here, we build it, they come. There's a group of people in your market who would be happy, I'm saying, to work in your organization if you explicitly talked about your mission and vision. They are there. You may not have seen them yet, but I would encourage you to take this approach. If you build it, they will come. Emphasize fit in the hiring process. And I'm sure this gentleman here, because you've got some great stories so far, uses these kind of tools, but are you putting enough emphasis on fit during the hiring process? People who are naturally, I actually will take, especially at a middle to senior management level now, I will actually handle our core values and I'll say, before I make you an offer, and I will typically say, and by the way, I'm leaning in that direction, so to know this is not a bait and switch thing going on. I'm leaning that way. But you know what? I get this one question. How are you going to line up with this set of core values? I'd like you to take that home and read it and call me tomorrow. Let's talk about that. And I've never had that be a problem. In most cases, they've said, I do have questions, or no, Matt, spot on, exactly what I believe in as well. Fit's important. Focusing on candidate character, very important. Be ready with the answer to the why question. You know, that's biblical. We're always supposed to be ready, right, in any season to give answers. I think some of the most dangerous things we've done as an organization and try to learn from is when someone asks, especially in a group, in an open session, a question about a value and we don't answer it. It's a why question, and we just don't answer it right away. We've disappointed people. And then actively deal with the non-engaged employee. Craig Warner from Gideon's, he was asked about how do you get buy-in. He says, well, you either change the person or you change the person. At some point, you know, there are some people who are never going to line up, and you really just have to move on. Next principle, next best practice. Solicit and respond to feedback. And, you know, the practice of proximity probably is the best thing you can do as a leader with your people in terms of getting them to understand the core values and the biblical frameworks that you have. In our organization, a few years ago, we changed all in our manufacturing sites. We moved all of our supervisory and leadership level jobs out of offices onto the shop floor. We moved them all out there. They're all in proximity. Not a single manager is out of view of their people. Now that helps two ways. Employees can actually see what their boss is up to, because they always used to wonder that. What does he do up there? And it makes them accessible. I could tell you dozens of stories of when an employee came to a manager because of proximity with a question that they said to me, I don't think they would have ever asked me that question if I wasn't nearby. They would have never asked me that question because they'd have said, oh, let's see, he's down the hall, upstairs, three flights, all the, you know, and they wouldn't do it. I think proximity is key. It really is, I think, a practice not difficult to do. And as much as we can, we should be practicing proximity to our people, giving them a chance to approach us and be approachable, coaching by example. Now, we mentioned survey. We do a survey as well every year. I think they're fascinating. But I would caution you about doing surveys. Anybody do a survey, employee survey in your company? Okay. Love to hear your experience. I would say do it, but only if it's not the only way you get feedback. If it's just an excuse to ask people's opinion once a year, it will not work. Don't do it, or do it only if it's constructed and owned by the team. Our survey was designed by our employees, not by management. And I'd be happy to tell you how we did that. Only if you do it, only if you have the nerve to respond. Because if you don't, that's a problem. Did you have a question about that?
How big is your company?
We have about 800 employees.
And different locations.
Different locations, yes. Right. Do it only if you have the resources to sustain what you said you're going to do, and only if you're willing to repeat it. So we repeat it. We do a baseline. We do a calculation. We look at our progress. We look at our regress. I get our CEO in front of our employees, and he presents those findings, and he takes the hit where we don't do well. and he loves it. Because it's a moment of transparency that it was difficult for him to think about initially, but now he looks forward to it. Okay? It's not done by some third party, in other words. All right, winding down here. We're close. Last best practice, adapt. Don't be rigid about this subject because, frankly, so much is changing in our world. Our culture is shifting. The makeup of your employees changes. You have to adapt. And an open mind opens minds. And one of my favorite conversations with employees at any level is when they have a question from the heart and you just sense that. This question is not about process or policy. It's coming out of the heart of that employee. And to stop and deal with that and to leverage that, if I might say it that way, in their life, in the lives of their coworkers, it's powerful. To have an employee go back to, you know what, I'll give you an example. The best example in my life ever of that, in a way, was I worked many years ago for a very large company, $25 billion company, and the CFO of that company would come down to my office about once a week, close my door, kick his feet up in the desk, and say something like, I am so glad to be out of that ivory tower today. Can we just talk? And he just wanted to kind of, he was not a believer, but he knew I was, and he just wanted to kind of spill his guts about the challenges of being upstairs. And I was like 19 levels below him, not just in terms of floors, but in terms of level. He really, really enjoyed doing that, okay? And in my mind, I think that's what I should be doing. I've got employees who I need to invade their life in a respectful way and say, can we just talk? I think that opens minds in an incredible way. And explore for understanding.
I think that has been so critical mm-hmm. for us in the last few years is, of course, that's one of Stephen Covey's 7 habits of highly effective people, is seeking to understand
exactly
before you seek to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of preached that to our leadership team. I mm-hmm. said, you need to find out what that person's really saying.
Don't
react to what they said or what they did.
Yeah.
Understand. Go ask questions. And, mm-hmm. and that's made such a huge difference is that.
Yeah. That's good. So finally, I just want to share this with you. In 2016, what we have done as an organization is we've distilled all of our kind of energy into a single acrostic, I'll call it. Everybody loves acrostics to help your memory, right? These 5 principles. And these 5 principles are the core of our communication this year. And all of these are being wrapped into everything that we do. Performance management, policy making, leadership development and training, all of that. These five. And they may not look like they're rooted in everything I've just said, but behind the scenes around this are all of the biblical principles that we want to be faithful. They are these qualities: flexibility, ownership, collaboration, urgency, and the last one's a bit longer, it's abbreviated here, safe relationships through mutual trust and respect. And that's a concept that this coming year we are focused on as an organization. Flexibility, ownership, collaboration, urgency, and safe relationships. In behind the scenes around that, in all of our training and development, in many cases with even chapter and verse references in Scripture, we're driving these things this coming year. All right, so we're about out of time here. That's kind of a blow through. You know, I like to, if I could close with this thought. I'm struck by the message from Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. He said this. He said, when I came to you, brothers and sisters, I did not come with superior eloquence and wisdom when I came to proclaim the testimony of God. He says, I came to you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. I did not come with persuasive words, but by a demonstration of the Spirit and of power, so that your faith might be strengthened, not by human wisdom, but by the power of God. I think that's the most critical thing for a leader to recognize that. You don't come with superior eloquence of wisdom or persuasive words. You come, as Paul said, actually back earlier in that chapter, he talked about how when I was among you, he said, I decided not to be concerned about anything but Christ Jesus and Him crucified. And I can just picture Paul in his mind having that mental image and thinking, I'm here as a messenger of God. not to be superior in eloquence and wisdom, but to be transparent in fear and trembling and weakness. That's not a good leadership word, is it? It is. And by doing so, to be a great example and to have ministry, to be a demonstration of the Spirit of God and power. Amen?
Amen.
Thank you. All right, thanks for coming today. That's 1 Corinthians chapter 2, first 4 or 5 verses.
Yeah, just real quick, just sort of a plug. Tomorrow, there's another breakout session called Faith in the Workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And the speaker is going to talk all about specific ways you can practically evangelize your employees, your customers, your community. And the guy who's doing it is awesome, so you should really go.
Okay, good.
Okay, it's me. But anyway, it's a good presentation.
Yeah. Okay, it's you.
It's a great correlation.
Yeah, right, about. Okay. I was going to put a plug in, but you beat me to it.
Yeah. How about correcting the spelling on your name?
Of course. Oh, D-A-C-U-S, but that's okay.
Yeah, so if you're looking tomorrow. Also, Peter Freisel is leading a breakout tomorrow. I'm glad you did that. I was going to plug you.
Oh, thank you.
So Peter is going to take a lot of the same concepts and talk about an implementation strategy and actually present a matrix that may help you to walk out with some action from. I'm torn because I want to hear both, and I'm blessed because I get to edit the audios later.
Great.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Great.
Thank you all.
Great job.
Yep.